Rewinds are brought to you by Laughlin and Wolfington, your home sold guaranteed realty. Find out how much your home is worth instantly at LaughlinWolfingtonRealty.com.
Spin Doctors John Wadsworth and Brent Littlefield on Maine's Morning News and the Newsmakers Hour. Before we get to the discussion of, and maybe it's some information that people don't have but they need, a label versus a true political affiliation, you guys wanted to maybe touch on the ranked choice voting results here in the state of Maine. Man, we've chewed up these numbers three ways to Sunday, I think, by now, but we'd be interested in what your thoughts are. We flipped a coin, and John, we start with you this week. What do you make of the ranked choice tabulation and the results you saw from the state of Maine?
As usual, there were some surprises from the compared to, you know, day one when the first numbers came out. You know, Hannah Pingree was not in the lead when this began, but she will be the Democratic nominee for governor. One thing that I found very interesting was that Graham Plattner, who was expected to do much better in the first district than the second, actually by percentage was identical and actually slightly better in the second than the first. It also is very interesting, you know, the Democratic National Committee had their preferred candidate in the House, but the people of Maine, of course, had their own opinion and went their own way. And so the Democratic nominee for Congress in the second district was not the DNC's number one pick, but I think in many ways that will help him. You know, ranked choice certainly leaves us surprises every time. But we do have nominees now. We have the races set. And I think we're going to see three very, very competitive races in the second congressional district, the Senate race, and the governor's race.
Brent, we pivot over to you. And if we recall correctly, the person that came in first in the initial voting for the Democrat nominee for governor did not win. The person who came in first in the second congressional district for the Dem nomination did not come in first. But in the Republican RCV in the initial round, the guy that eventually won did come in first. That was one of our observations. Brent, what did you see?
Look, we could spend hours and hours on this. The media have never covered ranked choice voting accurately in the state of Maine. It is a pox on the media's house. And even though I'm friendly with everybody, I'll just point out the Bangor Daily News continues to run polling with Fair Vote, which is a political advocacy organization that pushed ranked choice voting. So the actual BDN poll is paid for by people that are pushing ranked choice voting, which I just think is really unfair. I'll just say this. In 2018, Bruce Colloquin won the election on election night. And in any other state in the entire United States, Bruce Colloquin would have been in Congress in 2019, and he was not. And the people that paid for ranked choice voting were not Mainers. They were billionaires from out of state who pushed it, said it was constitutional for gubernatorial elections, which is not. That is a lie. And it's continued to wreak havoc on Maine elections. So it is what it is. It's there now, and I guess we'll have to deal with it down the road.
One last question. And John, to you, with the exception of California, which takes a really long time to count their votes, what does the rest of the nation think when they look at Maine doing this ranked choice tabulation thing, John?
You know, it's not just Maine. Alaska uses ranked choice. We just use ranked choice in Washington, D.C. Other places are using it. I mean, the fact is, it's growing. And it's growing because you're seeing states not want to have to go an extra 2 months after a primary and have to pay for a second election. And it's basically just instant runoff. You're getting a chance to vote for your runoff when you're in the ballot box for day one. Look, the people of Maine, they voted for it. It was not paid for by anyone. It was voted on by the people of Maine, and they chose it. It prevents phantom candidates from being propped up by one party or another to damage another candidate. when they're not fronting, and in the right way, you know, because they actually care, but because they're running just to damage, you know, a third candidate. And again, it saves enormous amounts of money. So, you know, the first time I think Maine did it, the other people who watch elections were, you know, staring at it with a little side eye, wondering what's going on. But now it's spreading and it's going to be used in other places. You know, as well as, you know, there's ranked choice now in places in California, Colorado, Delaware, Illinois, Maryland, Massachusetts, Minnesota, New Mexico, Oregon, I mean, Utah. I mean, it's taken over localities, and I think you'll see it continue to spread because, frankly, it's more efficient and it's more economical.
Brent, I want to turn to you. The one thing that John said that makes me wonder is we'd only need a runoff lasting two more months if there was an absolute true tie, because whoever has the most votes wins. But Brent, your thoughts?
Well, cancer spreads too, and just because it spreads does not mean it's a good thing. So this is a mess. We had the founding fathers created a system for this United States, and it worked great for generations. This is not an instant runoff. That is completely incorrect. A runoff, which I work in a lot of those elections around the country, is when the voters actually know who they're voting for. They can see the final two candidates. They can touch and feel and talk to and listen to the final two candidates over a period of weeks, and then they get to make a final choice. This is not that. And including in the case of the Republican primary for governor in Maine, where you said the guy won at the end, the reality is that you had tens of thousands of votes that were exhausted and thrown out. Those voters did not have a chance to vote in the runoff because they didn't know who the final candidates were and their ballots were thrown out. So it's just like in 2018, when Bruce Polacom was actually elected on election day. They kept saying, oh, Jerry Golden is the majority winner. Jerry Golden did not win a majority of the vote. He won the vote that were left over after the other votes were thrown out and as exhausted ballots. So what this is sort of like a public financing of elections, what I like to call welfare for politicians. It's a bad idea that unfortunately keeps spreading. And it keeps spreading by very left-leaning politicians and activists who just constantly want to change America, rather than accepting America's exceptionalism.
With insight into Maine's ranked choice tabulation, the Spin Doctors, Brent Littlefield and John Wadsworth on the Petey Kudor telephone line. Fellas, we swapped text messages yesterday, and even in the past 24 hours, 15 hours, I've seen people, mainstream media, labeling or stating that Graham Plattner's political affiliation is a socialist Democrat. There are Democrats. There are Democrat socialists. Are there socialist Democrats? John, I'm going to turn to you to give me some ideas and us some ideas on how we interpret the difference between a true political affiliation and a label. John?
Yeah, so, you know, we see this a lot. The fact is, socialists and social Democrats, or democratic socialists, those are very the same thing, are two very different things. And calling yourself a democratic socialist or a social Democrat might be the worst branding exercise since New Coke. It's really unfortunate because they're two very different philosophies. You know, socialism is widespread government, assumption of, you know, power and ownership. Democratic socialists believe in strong worker protections, strong welfare programs, and healthcare for those who need it. So it's two very different things. Unfortunately, because they're using a same word, people slam them together. So, we've heard this on this show. Anyone who is a Democrat gets labeled a socialist or a communist. But that's because, frankly, the Republicans don't have any answer for what's going on. They have no plan on affordability, no plan to help lower gas prices, lower grocery prices. And they are not a check on the worst whims of Donald Trump. His tariffs has devastated global markets. His war in Iran, which he chose to do, and frankly lost, has created a international economic crisis. And we've got 2.5 more years of this and whatever he feels like doing.
Brent, I'll turn to you and ask you to share from your perspective, what's the difference between a political label and a true political affiliation?
Well, there are wrinkles in both political parties. You know, anybody that thinks that everybody believes everything exactly the same just because you're a Democrat or Republican, it's a kind of a fool's errand. It's also a fool's errand to say that somebody's truly independent, because there's a lot of people that like to claim that they're moderates when they're really not, especially people that are left-leaning like to say that they're moderate. But if you look at their views, they're actually pretty far left. You see it a lot in America. But what's happening is we see a movement within the Democratic Party of a rise of socialism. And it's happening all across the street. It's happening very dramatically and very quickly. And I mean, again, I'll just point to the New York Times, and everybody knows that the New York Times is not a right-wing publication. It's a left-wing publication. And this is the exact headline that ran just this week. With win in Washington, socialists have momentum in urban America. And they're pointing out that Democratic Party is increasingly turning to socialism. We just had socialists win and take over the Washington, D.C. government. When they're sworn in, we have a socialist mayor of New York. You know, you look at a place like New York City where they make it almost impossible to start and continue to own a business. And then they say, you know what, we're just going to have the government take over grocery stores. We can do better. Of course, the government doesn't have to pay all the taxes and fees and deal with the regulations like a regular grocery store. So they just eliminate those costs and they say the government's going to run it. And what we see is socialists want to massively increase taxes. They want to massively increase the size of government. They want the government to take over more and more functions in the country that have not been run by the government. And if you think the government does something efficiently, I think you have another thing coming. And part of the rhetoric is we just have to stick it to certain Americans to pay for our government utopia concept. And they keep using the word fair share, even though the very, 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 very richest Americans pay the vast majority of taxes today. In fact, every single study shows that they pay up to twice their percentage of income or percentage of wealth in taxes. And the vast majority of taxes are paid by a very small number of people in the country. So it's just not a factual statement, but they keep saying it because they want to grow government and they want government. And by the way, what happens when they grow government? They get to be in charge. Instead of the power being spread out, for instance, among thousands of small business owners, it's concentrated in the hands of a very small number of people that can sit in, you know, windowless offices and make decisions for the rest of Americans. And that's really what this fight is about. And I just think we're still on the edges of this thing. This is just beginning. And probably throughout the rest of our lifetime, we're going to keep having this push-pull in each direction.
Rewinds are brought to you by Laughlin and Wolfington, your home sold guaranteed realty. Find out how much your home is worth instantly at laughlinwolfingtonrealty.com.